Blog Talk Radio.
Get it, because I know you're going to want to get it after you hear this show. It's called Healthier Steps,
125 gluten-free vegan recipes. Well, without further ado, Queen Michelle Blackwood, what an honor, a privilege to have you as my special guest today. I bow to you. Welcome to Juwanza for Life.
Thank you so much, brother. I'm so happy to be here, and thank you for everyone who's listening in. After such a beautiful introduction, I will just go right on in and continue. I'll start from my childhood. And, you know, I was raised in Jamaica, and you think right away, beautiful, sunny Jamaica with all lots of fruits and vegetables. Yes, we did. We had lots of fruit. But somehow, you know, growing up, I ate a lot of meat, and, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side, and, you know, you always want something that's imported because we took these things for granted. And, you know, lots of refined food, white flour, bread, cakes, white bread. Yes, we had a lot of imported foods, and we wanted that more than the things that were growing around us abundantly, lots of fruits and vegetables mm-hmm. all around. You just pick and eat. Some of them growing wild. But anyway, as a child, I suffered with serious sinus issues. I always had that snotty nose, always, you know, congested. Most of my childhood, I was always like that. And I drank a lot of milk and cheese, a lot of dairy food, and yes, a lot of the cows were grass-fed, but I still had those symptoms. And, you know, after I went to college in Jamaica, it was a college that served vegetarian food, but I couldn't wait until I could go on weekends so I could eat my chicken and, you know, my meat again. And, mm-hmm. you know, I ignored what was going on around me. you
right.
know, and anyway, go ahead, sir.
No, I was just agreeing with you. I was concurring with what you were saying. Yes, ma'am. Please continue.
Yes, yes. So anyway, I migrated to England where I studied nursing, and I became a registered nurse and kept eating the same way. And then I ate a lot more dairy in England. It was a lot of pizza, and I ate out a lot more. And even though I could cook, I still enjoyed eating, going to different restaurants and fast food and the Pizza Hut. I remember because we didn't have a lot of fast food places in Jamaica. You know, we had, you know, I had more opportunity in England to eat from fast food. So for me, it was like I was catching up because, you know,
right.
I see these things in magazines. So anyway, when I then migrated here, to the U.S., I started hearing a lot about the food, and there were health food stores around me. I met my husband, we got married, and I started visiting health food stores, and we started hearing about organic food, and we were like, oh, growing up in Jamaica, mostly everything was organic, and we took it for granted. And in England, I didn't hear GMO and all that. So, you know, out of curiosity, I started researching, and we started studying, and we started going to health food store, and we would listen to what the manager or whoever was there would teach us about the food, and we were like, "What? They're doing these things to our food? Really? Why?" And we all, you know, I also noticed a difference in taste. If you've eaten a mango that's in the Caribbean, I mean, and a mango here, or some of the food that when you go home, the food is, you know, more intense, the flavors are. And so, you know, when I ate at the health food store this stuff, I was like, there is a difference from conventional foods. And as we kept studying, it opened up a whole new arena for me to study more. I was listening to people like Gary Null and studying a lot on mm-hmm. diet and health and, you know, natural healing, and it just piqued my interest. But at that time, I was working at the hospital, and while working there, I was on a cardiac floor, and I noticed that my patients would come in, and they would come in for different issues. We'd have them on cardiac monitors, and I noticed that the meals that they were being served were the steak, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, how come they're eating the same things that all that saturated fats and all the food, processed food that caused them to be ill in the first place, that they were eating all that food. It was like terrible, and I couldn't understand why. And they would leave, and, you know, I got to know them, and they leave, and then 2 to 3 months later, they'll come again. And when I, you know, when I saw them, I would be shocked. I'll be, is that the same person that I saw 2 to 3 months ago? And after a while, they were known as frequent flyers because they'll be in and out. And but what one thing I noticed that as they kept coming, returning, they would look worse, and their medications would increase. And sometimes we'll lose them in the process. Sometimes they would make it, they'll go, and they'll die. Or we'll have to transfer them to ICU, and later on we heard that they're dying. Some of them were young, and I was like, I felt discouraged. I felt like I was not part of the solution, because here I was studying about health and learning all these things, and then now here I am. I wasn't able to do anything about it. I couldn't tell them to change their diet, because I was afraid that I'll lose my job. So I started telling my husband, I'll come home, and I said, you know what, I can't do this for the rest of my life. I'm sorry. I don't feel like I'm doing, I could be doing more if I could be more on the prevention side. And so a position opened up for him, for us to move to Virginia and to be more in the countryside, and for me to be home to homeschool my daughter. And she was 5 at that time, so it was the perfect timing. So I had that opportunity. And so when we relocated, I spent most of my time doing, that's when I started doing cooking classes. I started doing health lectures. I would do cooking classes at the public library or whoever, or in my home. I always love to feed people. Come on, and I'll cook all these foods that were 100% plant-based. And the response was very good. And we, at that time, though, I struggled with health issues because I had carpal tunnel syndrome. And with my carpal tunnel syndrome, they were giving me steroid shots. And after the second one, I was like, there's no way I'm going to take a third shot. I'm just going to go on a juice fast. And I went on a juice fast and lost weight and felt better. And to this day, I don't suffer with carpal tunnel syndrome anymore. And that was one of, like, another confirmation that was in the right direction that I was heading. And anyway, my daughter was 11, 10 going on 11, when I got pregnant with my son, because all these years we were trying and I was trying. But time when I got pregnant, I was on raw food. I was on a raw food diet. And I was exercising and everything. And it was a surprise because we weren't planning, because we just, it was, nothing was happening. So anyway, with me getting pregnant, I wanted to do natural, because with my daughter at the time, when I was pregnant with her, I ended up having a C-section. And I remember in England, they pushed having the second time around that you should do, they call it VBAC, that you should go ahead and have a vaginal delivery. And they encouraged that in England when I was a nursing student. So here I put it out to my doctor, and they weren't excited about the idea. They were like, no, we mostly go for second time around C-section. So anyway, I found a midwife in my community, and she was excited. We're both excited. But the issue was, I didn't know my exact date, because, like I said, I wasn't planning, and I didn't know. I didn't expect. It was a surprise. So I didn't know when I was exactly. We had an estimate, but it wasn't. So when 3 weeks came and waiting for my son to arrive, and he didn't arrive, my midwife, she called me up, and she said, you know what, Michelle, I won't be able to take you on, because this is like 3 weeks based on our calculation, and I think you need to go to the hospital. And I was devastated. I literally went into labor. We went to the hospital. When I went to the hospital, they put me up on the monitor and everything, and they said, well, your contract is perfect. You're, like, ready to have a baby, but you're not dilating, so you need to do a C-section. And I'm like, no, please just wait it out. I want to go natural. They insisted. The doctors came in, and they insisted. And I said, you know what? I've been waiting for so long to have another child, and I don't want to put the child at risk. So I felt guilty, and they, you know, after they talked me into it, they went ahead and did a procedure. The baby was fine. He's fine, no problem. But I was in severe pain, and I kept complaining that I'm in a lot of pain that was abnormal because they did a C-section. I was like, I'm in so much pain. And day one, day two, I was going to the bathroom. So, you know, they're like, you're not going. So they gave me, you know, they gave me percolates. They tried everything for me to go, and I still wasn't. My blood pressure was fine, but they started noticing that my heart rate was going up. On the fourth day, when I was supposed to be discharged, they realized that something was really, really majorly wrong. So they decided to discharge my son and send me for a scan, a CAT scan. And in the CAT scan, they found that they had nicked my intestines in two places, and there was fluid, feces in my enteral area. So I was septic. I had septicemia, and they had to do emergency surgery. So I was like whisked off, and the chaplain came to pray me out of this world and say goodbye, and basically, they did the procedure. My husband, you know, naturally was telling me what happened. The doctor went in, but before he went in, he told my husband, you know what, she doesn't have a strong chance of surviving because if this is 4 days that she's been like this, and I'm going to do my best, but there's a possibility, a high chance that she's going to end up with a colostomy bag. My husband turned to him and said, please, no matter what you do, please don't do the bag if you can do because she's so young. So he said, I'll treat her like my own wife. And he went in and he cleaned me up, but he said that, you know, he had to take my intestines out and washed it inch by inch. And he said, while he was doing it, I think he said 2 hours within the procedure, he had to stop because my heart was already under so much pressure. He had to stop and just leave me on the table. They said when they came and saw me, all my intestines were still hanging out and just a sheet was over my naked body. And basically he was waiting to see if I could make it through the night. And anyway, I survived the night. And by then my relatives came, and an aunt of mine came, who was also a nurse for many, many years, ICU in Bronx. She came, and she began to tell them that I'm not going to make it with this, you know, with all the what the readings. They need to do this, they need to do that. And it's when the doctor agreed and the nurses did what she recommended, I made it through. And so they had me in a medically induced coma for 5 days. And
a medically induced coma?
That I might have made. Medically induced coma, where they had to sedate you. They had to make sure you're sedated, fully sedated, because they don't want any kind of stress or anything. And if you're on it for over like a week, they'll have to put a trach in your neck. They'll have to open up your neck, and you know. So I didn't have to do that. They didn't have to do that procedure on me. And it turned around that they had to do a lot of procedures though, because by then my body was forming abscesses all over my abdomen. So they had to go in through my back. I had to have like chest tube drainage, you know. I had to have, you know, chest tube inserted, and also, you know, on my abdomen, they had to go in one by one to drain these abscesses that were being formed all over my body. So I spent a month in the hospital, and by the time they discharged me, they still had me sign a form, basically, that they believe that I'm going to come back. I wasn't going to even make it out there. But as soon as I got home, I knew I wanted to be home because I knew it was time. I'd spent enough time in the hospital, and I needed to go to the next level of recovery. You know, I had physical therapy at home, learning to walk again. And, you know, if you think about it, I have incision that was vertical and then going across, you know, on lower abdomen because of both the C-section and they going into me more than once. plus wow. all the holes around my abdomen. So by the time I got home, I was on a lot of painkillers, strong narcotics. And the nurse that came to see me, she was ready to send me back to the hospital the first day. She said, I don't think you can make it out here. You're in so much pain, and you're not looking good. You need to go back. I begged her. I said, please, whatever you do, I don't want to go back there. I'll die if I go back. I need to be home with my family, my baby, my newborn. I'll heal faster. So she said, well, you have to, I suggest you'll have to come off those pain medications. So I said, I will come off. And I don't recommend this, but I came off cold turkey. And she recommended some herbs like fennel tea, dill, and peppermint, and I went on those, and it helped. And in no time, I had friends that came in from New York, and they took turns in juicing for me, juicing and making meals that were simple meals, juicing, lemon water. I remember getting the lemon water, and I was in severe pain, but it helped. It helped. And within a month of going back to the hospital, turn to the doctors that are student doctors and all that were around me, and he was telling them, he said, this young lady should not be alive. She should be dead. She's a miracle. And he said that I had healed 110%, and I'd never been back. After that day, that was it. I've never been back to the hospital, nothing, and that was it. Because we continued on the juicing. And as my stomach healed and I walked again and I gained back my strength and everything, about a year and a half to 2 years later, I remember it was around then, I started having stomach issues. And I noticed whenever I ate, you know, bread or anything that has gluten, that it seemed as if my whole system would shut down. My body could not process it. And you know, it started getting progressively worse, and I would back off, and it, you know, but I started noticing it. But at that time, I was not like, I mean, still, I was just hearing about gluten, but I just thought that it was for everybody else was having the problem, and, you know, that it would never affect me. But being that my abdomen was compromised, I should have known that, you know, this was it, and I needed to just stop eating it, period. And plus, as a plant-based, you know, eating plant-based, eating as a vegan, we eat a lot of carbs, you know. And I, even though it's not refined carbs, I was still eating a lot of carbs. And I was like, okay, you know, and kept going. And one morning I woke up and I went to the bathroom and I was in severe pain, severe stomach pain. And I could not urinate nor, and I felt like I wanted to go to the bathroom to do a number two, but I couldn't. I was like, what's going on? And anyway, my husband had to help me back to bed. I was very weak, and he ended up calling my doctor, my primary. And my doctor is one of those DOs where, you know, he understands a lot about natural and everything. And he knew where I was, you know, where my mind was. And he said, okay, no, tell your wife, don't eat. Just go on a liquid diet and you go and get magnesium citrate and give that to her, and we'll keep monitoring her. And so he kept monitoring me, to have his nurse call me every 4 hours, and I was just having this spasmic pain just going on and on in my abdomen, and it was just severe, and I was very weak. And as I took the magnesium citrate, it started, a lot of mucus came out, a lot of, you know, I was constipation, then diarrhea, and it was like a constipation, diarrhea, constipation. So I told him the symptoms, and he said, oh, anyway, I want to just make sure you are not having a blockage. So go to the hospital and, you know, have a scan done. We went, and it was not, you know, went back to see the doctor the next day, and he said, you don't have a blockage, but you have irritable bowel syndrome, or IBS. And he told me just to continue the fluid until I feel better. And I did for about 3 weeks. And I started feeling better, getting my energy back. And he said to me, stay away from gluten and stay away. So that led me to start creating recipes. So I went on a mission to create recipes that were now gluten-free. And that's where it took me about like 2 years of experimenting And by then, I had already started blogging because I was so excited about doing, the fact that I was already homeschooling my daughter, and I had this opportunity to blog and share all the delicious meals that I was creating. And I was in an environment where I was constantly cooking that I was able to share on the internet. Even though at that time I was not computer savvy, I had my daughter who was. She would put the stuff on, but I created all the recipes. And so that was the beginning of my cookbook. And one may say, what is gluten anyway? You know, that would be the question people might be listening would ask. And actually, gluten is a Greek word for glue. And it is mostly found in wheat, barley, rye, and oats, some oats that have been contaminated. And it is a protein. And because gluten is made up of two proteins, glutenin and gliadin. And the gliadin is really the one that is the culprit. And actually the word gluten, it was virtually unknown in the last generation. You know, so it's and I'm sure that a lot of people have been hearing that, oh, this food is gluten-free, that food is gluten-free. But a lot of people don't know really what it is. It's actually the protein, this gliadin protein that has, you know, different reactions for different people. And from what they're doing research, there are many people that are going around with symptoms, whether they eat a meal and they have stomachache, and they're ignoring it, and they have not put the correlation that the gluten is causing a problem. And in the diet, there's three ways that the gluten can bring about problems for people who are sensitive, and the worst one is celiac disease. And this is like a permanent intolerance to gluten. And
which disease is that? Can you repeat that?
It's called celiac.
Could you repeat the disease again? What is that?
Celiac. C-E-L-I-A-C. Celiac disease. And it more occurs in people who are genetically predisposed to it. So it's more like on a genetic basis. And a lot of children you will find will have it. And for them, they can't have gluten at all. And it actually leads to like an autoimmune response. So when they consume anything that has gluten, coming like an autoimmune response, so just like someone who has diabetes, lupus, multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis. And you'll find a lot of people who do have these diseases, they'll find that their symptoms may improve by going gluten-free because it's the same kind of interaction. So say, for instance, someone eats food that contains gluten and celiac disease, their body actually sees that protein as an invader, and the body starts releasing antibodies. And, you know, they can tell that the person has it because these antibodies can be actually seen in blood work. And these antibodies, what they do is they attach to the protein, and they actually attack the lining of the intestine. So in the small intestines where you have those villi, those hair-like projections that are necessary for the absorption of nutrients, they actually damage them and flatten them. So they're not standing up hair-like anymore with that projection. They become damaged and they're flattened. And so when that occurs, people cannot digest, they cannot absorb the minerals and the vitamins in food, nor the calories. And a lot of times they end up becoming anemic. They become, you know, malnourished because they're not getting their proper nutrition. And many of the symptoms can be stomachache, bloating, loss of appetite. They become irritable. They have rashes, skin rashes, mouth ulcers. Even a lot of people who end up with celiac disease can now have other diseases, like they find that they have a higher rate of having intestinal cancer, type 1 diabetes, infertility, And so a myriad of diseases can occur from celiac disease. And there's a special test that is done. It's called a tissue transglutaminase antibody, or a TTG test. And usually if someone has celiac disease, in about 98% of the, you know, these patients, they are positive. So it's for the TTG antibody. And you might say, okay, what is the cure? What is the solution? If that person, all they have to do is go on a gluten-free diet. That's it. They go on a gluten-free diet, stay away from foods that contain gluten, and they're fine. And they'll be able to, you know, live a normal life. And it will also give time for the gut lining to heal. The projections in the gut, the villi, they're able to heal.
So they'll stand back up. I'm sorry to interrupt, but you're saying that they'll stand back up. The ones, those projections that have laid flat,
yes.
They will stand back
yes.
up. That will be the
yes.
result of going gluten-free. The gut lining will heal itself by those fibers or hair-like substances that
yes.
were laying flat now
yes.
will come back to normal, which is standing up like hair.
Exactly, absolutely. And that's just to show the power of healing, that the body is able to heal. Treat it the right way, give it the right food, the body is able to heal itself.
I'm sorry, I was just going to ask you, if I can ask you this, what are some of the foods then that contain gluten? Because I'm sure that the listeners, somebody listening might be like, well, if I go gluten-free, well, what has gluten in it so that I know what I need to avoid?
Right. The main thing is the wheat, barley, the rye, and even some oats in some people, but not everyone. And then this is it. If you think of, which I'll touch on a little later, or I can just go ahead and
mm-hmm.
talk about that now, that if you think about it, when you get up in the morning and you eat breakfast, the typical American we eat bagel, we eat toast, we eat sandwich, that made peanut butter jelly sandwich, muffin, you name the pancake, waffles, that's all gluten. That's
wow.
all gluten. And then for lunch, pasta, pizza. For the soups, and I'm going to go over all that. There's just so many foods that, yes, there are a lot of food that people consume all day long that do contain gluten. And, you know, so I will go over and just talk about, okay, one of the reasons, and that's one of the reasons why I believe that so many people are now becoming, you know, sensitive to gluten because of the overconsumption of gluten products. Because like we said, for breakfast, you have all that. Then for lunch, you have the pasta, the pizza, the soup, the tortilla maybe in a wrap. You have the chicken wings that's breaded, you know, fried chicken. For dinner, you come home, you have maybe macaroni and cheese, the noodle, all that. Anything that's made from wheat. And the thing is, a lot of the times, these things are made from refined wheat. So there is a difference from whole wheat and refined wheat. But the thing is, if you think about, they both have the protein. But the refined one, it's even more because the fiber has been removed. And so,
mm-hmm.
So most of these gluten food, they're high carbs, high caloric foods, and they don't have the vitamins, the minerals, and most importantly, they don't have the fiber. So what that does on the body when someone consumes refined bagel or anything that's made with white flour, there's a sharp increase of your blood sugar. And that usually with that spike and then a crash, because it goes up in your blood, you know, because it goes right in because there's no fiber to let it slowly digest and assimilate in the body. And with that sharp rise, then there's always a crash after that affects, cause the person to be irritable. And not only all this leads to chronic disease like diabetes, high blood pressure. And, you know, fiber is very good in the diet because it prevents constipation, lowers your cholesterol level. It makes you even feel full longer. So what would happen? Mm-hmm. You eat these food that are so refined, you end up eating more. You're not eating the whole bag of chips because it's, mm-hmm. you know, all this refined food. You eat mm-hmm. more and more and more because your body's like, give me nutrients, please. I need it. I need the vitamins. I need mineral. I need, just give me more. So you overconsume, eating more and more products that do contain, say, gluten, or you end up eating all this more refined processed food. So, and if you think about it, like, say, for instance, a half a cup of white flour contains, like, 1.3 gram of fiber versus a half a cup of whole wheat flour contains 6.4 grams of fiber. So that's one of the reasons that they're thinking why, you know, there's a lot of increase in people becoming sensitive, because we're just consuming just way too much than our parents did and our grandparents did. And, you know, and not only that, if you think about with the glycemic index, which is what you use to measure the sugar, how the sugar mm-hmm. is assimilated in the body, in a refined food, they have a higher glycemic index. That measurement is higher mm-hmm. than a whole grain food. So there's always this spike, and it affects even our emotions, the high, that low. It sends our body mm-hmm. on a yo-yo, you know, craving for more stuff. Give me more, give me more. And an interesting thing I'm going to talk about, too, is hybridization. The wheat, why did they hybridize it? Because the wheat that we have now has been highly hybridized over the last 50 years. They did it so that they can increase the gluten content. So the wheat that we have now, you know, compared to the wheat 50 years ago, has way more gluten. And you remember, the gluten is what is causing this problem. The body is seeing this gluten as a foreign invader. The body's like, where are you? I don't know you. Because mm-hmm. man has used, by genetics, not genetical engineering, but by genetics, they have been hybridizing and creating new strains of gluten. And even in one study, they said that they found about 14 new strains of gluten.
Wow.
And why did they do that? Why did they do that? They did it to increase the production, and they wanted to create more like a hardy, pest-resistant wheat, and that one that has a longer shelf life. So it's more for the manufacturers, the commercial industry, the industrialization. It's more for more to put more money in their pocket. They're not thinking, because guess what? They never did any research on it, how it would affect the human being. There was no testing done on it, on neither animals nor humans. But guess what? I think we are a living lab. We're all guinea pigs. So we're being used as live guinea pigs, because as time goes on, we're finding more and more people are coming down with symptoms or complaining, and people will be like, is it just a fad? No, because there were no testing that were done on these new hybridized high, you know, gluten content yields of wheat. Okay. And the problem is,
well,
if you think about it.
Well, I'm sorry. I just wanted to ask, because, you know, there are so many people out here that are becoming vegetarian. There are so many people that are becoming vegan. There are a lot of people that have made and are continuing to make the transition from a meat-based diet to a plant-based diet. But you rarely hear, at least I haven't heard, much of what I'm hearing today. Just the focus and the zeroing in on gluten and the problems that gluten causes. As a matter of fact, there are many, many people who have stopped eating white bread because they were told that, you know, that enriched white flour is not good for you, or processed food isn't good for you. So they've switched, and they've actually said, well, I don't eat white bread anymore. I eat wheat bread, you know. So for those who are thinking, well, what am I going to eat then if I can't eat wheat bread? and certain things, and you'll, of course, share that with us. What other types of even bread should, and I think you mentioned rye wasn't good. Is that correct?
Rye isn't good, and barley isn't good. And if you do have that sensitivity, and, you know, you hit an, because I was of the same. I was like, I'm safe with whole wheat. And what we're finding more and more people that even eat the whole wheat bread, they will complain that they feel bloated. And, you know, they feel bloated right after eating it. They feel that sensation of brain fog. And so, guess what? There's so many other grains that, and so many other food that we eat on a day-to-day basis that don't contain gluten. And, you know, people are not, say, for instance, your sweet potato, your potato, that those don't have your squashes. So there are other foods that you can eat, your brown rice, that don't contain gluten, that you'll be fine. And so it is not like you're going to be stripped down. It's just that we, man has used up, you've made everything, you know, with this bread and this wheat, and everything is made with wheat. But when you start, like, that's what my cookbook did, you know, I started to experiment with other grains. Like, I'm just even enjoying nowadays even teff. Teff is a delicious grain that I'm able to make, you know, bread or tortilla-like products, pancakes with teff, that it's from Ethiopia. And it's delicious, and it's grown here. They're beginning to grow it here in the U.S. and in Canada. And that grain is very, it's a complete protein, and it has vitamin C, a lot of minerals and vitamins, and it's good. There's a millet. There is sorghum. There's so many other grains that are out there. And I think variety is always the key, to eat a variety, because you're getting nutrients from different vegetables, fruits, and grains when you eat a variety of in your diet. But when you eat the same thing over and over again, you know, that's when it causes problem, because it becomes like an overload on the system. So, yes, there are other grains that you can eat. Quinoa. Quinoa is a South American grain that is also a complete protein. And as you know, when you make the transition, people always say, where are you going to get your protein from? There are grains that do contain complete protein, for instance, the teff and the quinoa, that you can now put in your diet. And guess what? You're eating this, you're feeling full, they have all the fiber content. So you're not really missing anything when you make the transition.
You know, everybody, my special guest is Queen Michelle Blackwood. She's an author, and I'm going to tell you, the name of her book is Healthier Steps, 125 Gluten-Free Vegan Recipes. That's right, 125 Gluten-Free Vegan Recipes. It's called Healthier Steps, and we're going to tell you how you can get that book before the show is through, because, again, for a lot of people just making the transition, they're like, well, what am I going to eat? You know, I mean, I've been told that meat is not good. I've been told that dairy is not good. I've been told that I shouldn't eat this and I shouldn't eat that, and I need to stop eating this and, stop eating that. But people have this idea that becoming a vegetarian or vegan is just going to have them just eating, you know, salad all day long, you know. So, no, there are delicious recipes out there that you can get, and Queen Michelle is going to tell you how you can get her book. Because I'm sure that you know, especially for the ladies out there that love to cook, you know, you can experiment and have fun and get healthy at the same time. By the way, I want to let my listeners know that are online, if you'd like to speak with my guest, all you have to do is press 1, and then I will bring you on board and you can make your comment or ask your question. Again, I'm so honored to have as my special guest today Queen Michelle Blackwood. Again, she's author of Healthier Steps, 125 Gluten-Free Vegan Recipes. Let me ask you this, Queen Michelle, and that is this. I mean, you've been in the medical field, as a registered nurse. I'm sure that you must have seen over the years that even nurses and doctors, because of the fact and their strict adherence to allopathic medicine, their strict adherence to what they've been trained to do, surgeons are trained to cut, you know. When doctors, you come across them, they will treat your symptoms. And they, you know, and nurses who are pretty much following the direct orders of the doctor. I assume if the doctor says, do this, the nurse does this, and, you know, this is the establishment and the system that they're in. I'm sure that you've seen just the illnesses of people in the medical profession who are absolutely there to help treat and help other people alleviate the diseases, but find themselves falling victim to the same things that they're trying to treat. Is that correct?
It is correct, because they're eating they're eating the standard American diet themselves, and they're not listening to Hippocrates, who said, let food be your medicine. So they're going off to use drugs and, you know, chemicals, and they're not treating, trying to find out what's the cause. They're more treating symptoms and just focusing on symptoms, and give you a medication, and that medication has side effects, and they give you another medication that, you know, helps the side effects. So if you look at the whole cycle and then you look at their lives, you know, what do we expect? It's the same thing. You know, they're just as victim as their patients.
I'm sure that you've seen that. And how was that process? I want to go back for a second. Just once you saw the natural, I was going to say a miracle, but the natural outcome as a result of you, well, we'll say changing your diet. I like to use the word live it, changing your diet to a live it. And, you know, you, when you got rid of all of the things that you weren't supposed to eat and started giving your body what it needed to heal itself, just that whole process afterwards, after you actually went through the storm and now you're on the other side and you're like, wow. I mean, because, you know, we all have our different challenges. We all have our different challenges in life. And that was a serious challenge. Anytime you're near death because of anything, that's a serious challenge. But if we, I mean, you've written a book, you've written a physical book, but if we want to look at your life as a book, you actually decided that this story is not going to end with me dying on the operating table. This story is going to have a different twist. This story is going to be the sister gets up off the table, the sister heals herself and goes out and writes books, and now she goes about healing everybody and sharing this information. So mentally, just how was that for you once you look back at that young lady who was laying on the table with her intestines hanging out, to now this person who's an author, you know, who's doing workshops, you know, who's alive, who's, you know, and sharing this other this information and telling other people how they can enhance their life. How's that, how was that process for you?
You know, I made a commitment that my life would be a life of sharing, of teaching others who come. My biggest joy is to talk about health, about healing, to learn about it. So from then on, my conversation is based around that. It's based around teaching people, or sharing with people, or having people come to my house and taste the food that I prepare, and for them to, you know, go, wow, is this real? Is this, you know, my latest was my guest on Sunday, and they were like, they couldn't believe that I made the rice with brown rice. And I used the opportunity to teach the wife how to make brown rice that tastes like white rice, because she could not believe it. They both couldn't believe it. And so my life, my passion, and my biggest joy is to teach, is to share, is to learn about health. And it's something that I believe in so much that, and for me also, it has taught me to respect people where they're at, to say that we are all on different paths on the journey, not to judge. For me, not to, you know, because it's a struggle. It's a struggle to improve. It's a struggle to, because I believe that the foods that you eat that are not good for you, they also have this hold on you, trying to keep you into a place that you don't want to go explore the other side that has beautiful and better foods for you. Lots of more variety, but you're just so comfortable in that area in your life. You know it's not good for you, but you're like, I'm afraid to step out. I'm here to hold your hand and to say, come on over. There's better things awaiting over. Your life won't be the same again once you make that step to try new dishes. So I go out and I love to do the classes, because I prepare those meals in front of my clients, and they get to taste and they see, and I like to see the reaction because they're like, wow, I need to eat this every day. Where did you buy it? That's my joy. That's my passion. And even my family, my husband, he got to realize, he had to come to a state where he's like, look, I said, look, I have, this is my calling, and that's my for my passion. So I have his 100% support because he saw that I cannot focus on anything else, you know, when you're, that's it. Because I feel that's why my life was there.
You know, that's truly amazing. I love to hear testimonies that change people's lives. You know, I talk to people all the time who in the holistic health field that have had experiences that change their lives, and they actually become guests on the show and regulars on the show because there are people out here who need to hear this information, and they need to hear it over and over and over again. Somebody here, now this is a very, very powerful testimony that you gave today, okay? But somebody's going to need to hear it again. You know what I mean? So I'm going to possibly explore the possibility of even having you back on the show because this is a issue that is so important that people need to hear it over and over and over again because as soon as this show is done, they go back to their lives. You know, we go back to our lives. So once the show is over, somebody might be listening and they're like, you know what, that's powerful information. She's on it. She really broke it down. You know, I'm going to watch my gluten or eliminate it completely. But then the show is over and you got to go back to your life, you know. And so if you could just even talk about the importance of surrounding yourself with people who are on the same journey with you, if in fact you're talking about making the transition from a meat-based diet to a plant-based diet, you need support. You need a support system. You need people that are knowledgeable around you that can, you know, help you. I mean, because of course those taste buds are going to fight you when it comes to making that transition if you don't know or have other recipes there that you can fix to take the place of what you have been doing, because once you put something down, that has to be replaced with something. But even with that, if you could just talk about the need to surround yourself with people who are going to support you as you make this transition to a healthier journey and lifestyle.
Yes, I agree with you absolutely that, you know, you have to, like, start, like you say, you know, seeking out for people who eat the way you'd want to eat. And it's always, in Jamaica, we say, show me your company and I tell you who you are. Because you know your weakness. You know that chicken wings is your weakness. Don't keep going where the chicken wings, you know, are always. You just, because you'll be with people who are going to make maybe some kind of barbecue, cauliflower. So it could be, we have so many resources nowadays. Actually, there's no excuse for anyone because there's just so many resources. If you are on the computer, we have groups on Facebook. There's groups all over, you know, whatever social media, Twitter, whatever. Mm-hmm. There are so many groups. Like there's a Healthy 24/7. That's a group of supportive men and women who support. There's recipes, there's tips, there's just so much support for you through the entire transition process, wherever you are, from beginner stage to advanced, and it's a family. So you can find there's meetup groups in your neighborhood. You just go online and look for meetup groups. There's vegetarian meetup groups on meetup.com. There's just so many. The health food store in your area, start going there more often and meeting people. That's what I did. I made many friends just from going to the health food store. So there's just so much more support that's out there than, say, 10, 20 years ago when I started. So, you know.
Well, you know what? I just want to say to the listeners, thank you so much. Somebody wants to talk to you. Okay, so. yeah, you said something that has been so powerful that somebody wants to talk to you. Okay, so. One sec, 4500. I'm coming to you right now. Hold on 1 second. And my special guest is Queen Michelle Blackwood. That's 4560, I'm sorry. Coming to you now. Thank you for your patience. You are on the air with Queen Michelle Blackwood. Welcome to Juwanza for Life.
Thank you.
Hello, Jolanta and Michelle. This is Carmen. I hope you're both doing well.
Hi,
and
Carmen.
I'm really enjoying
Queen
it.
Queen Carmen, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. And I'm so thankful to you, Jolanta, for having this wonderful program, and to Michelle, who I met a few years ago through Khalil. And because she was making soaps. She makes a product that I can use, and my skin is really pretty bad. But anything she makes, I can use. And anytime I need to know, like if I'm eating something if my blood pressure is high, I'll either inbox her or call her and say, Michelle, what can I eat now? How can I do this? So what you're saying about surrounding yourself with people who are either like-minded or who are supportive, it's one of the best things I ever did for myself. So I'm very happy to have met her. I've been talking to her as she put all these recipes together. And she's just a walking miracle. And I'm very thankful to have her in our life. And if you'll just let people know a little bit about how you homeschooled your daughter and how well she's doing in school, and your son, and the fact that you grow a lot of your own food. I mean, it's what people need to know, because a lot of stuff that you buy in the store is no good, mm-hmm. or it's got GMOs in it. You know that you can always do better if you grow your food. Now, I don't know if you can hear me because I'm at a I had to dart in any place I could get a connection. Okay. But I'm going to listen to what you have to say. Okay?
Thank you so much, Queen
Carmen. You know, I love you. Thank you. I'm just so happy to share with you, and, you know, I see you as my mother, so it's been a blessing to have a relationship with you.
She's my daughter from another mother.
Yes. I'll talk about the growing. That's another thing, gardening and growing my own food has been like a passion too, because I maybe it's part of my nature. I love to know what I eat, what I put on my skin. I love to know what, you know, so as much as I can, I'll grow my own food. I have a garden, and the surplus I had, I sold at the farmer's market, and I had a greenhouse, but we recently moved here to Ohio, so we didn't set up a greenhouse as yet, but we'd love to have a greenhouse, and, you know, in the future. And when you talk about GM foods, if you think about it, they put what they call BT toxins, and it's actually a bacteria that they put in the cells of the plant. So you can't go washing it off. It's just not going to happen. It's actually on a mm-hmm. cellular level that it's done in the lab. And what this does, it's actually a cousin of anthrax. And if you think of anthrax, it's a cousin of it. When that insect eats that plant that has the BT toxins, their stomach explodes. Think about what we are doing on a daily basis when all day long we're eating GMO food.
Mm-hmm.
Because what it does is it basically causes our stomach to explode. That's why people are having stomach issues of lately, too. That's one of the other reasons. And also wipe out the gut, you know, flora. And another thing that's also causing a lot of problems is antibiotics. They're giving antibiotics for viral infection, just constantly giving antibiotics. It's in everywhere. It's even in our hand washes. So that's the reason I made hand soaps and my own skincare products. Because with the antibiotics, what that does too, whenever you take a round of antibiotics, it actually wipes out your gut flora. When your gut flora is gone, that means all that good bacteria that's needed in the body is not there. So your immune system becomes weakened. And what happens is you eat that protein, that gluten protein, it just goes in, attacks the lining, and it goes straight in your bloodstream without being digested. So you're actually having people with literally undigestible food, and this is what occurs. It's called leaky gut syndrome. And then this food escapes into the bloodstream, it goes into the brain, A lot of people end up having foggy brain, Alzheimer's disease, and it's a myriad of diseases that can be traced back to leaky gut syndrome. And so I could go on about it. And just to go on to talk about my daughter, I had the pleasure, and I know it's not everyone can do it, so it's not to brag. It was just the opportunity, you know, accord for me to have the opportunity to homeschool my daughter. And so with her homeschooling, by the time she was 15, she's like, Mom, I've had enough of being homeschooling. I'm ready for college. And she did the application. She was accepted. So she went to college at 15. And so she's a sophomore
wow.
now in college. And she just got her license, and she got her first job. So she's holding her own, a student still. And I'm so thankful for the opportunity that I had to homeschool her. And I hope to do the same with my son, too. So that's about my daughter.
That is
so
powerful. No, you're proud.
I am. But I'm thankful for I'm more grateful, thankful for the opportunity that I had to do that because it allowed her to have this, it's amazing to think for her own self, she was also, by the time she reached a certain age, she did all her work by herself. I didn't have to come and say, did you do this, did you do that? She's done. When it was time for her to
mm-hmm.
go to college, I didn't ask her to say, do you want to go to college? Do you want to? No, I'm ready now, Mommy. I want to go to college. Well, we say, okay, do the entrance exam. She did it, passed with flying colors. So that is something about, the creative, the way to think for yourself, not to think in a box. It gave her that opportunity to.
Well, I'm sure that
homeschooling for those who can do it. Able to.
Well, I'm sure that the food that she was eating, the food that you were preparing, played a large role in just her having the clarity of mind to be able to focus, to be able to retain the information, to not have to deal with brain fog, that a lot of people that are on different diets end up dealing with. I'm sure that the diet played a large role in it. But I want to, in addition to congratulating you, I want to tell people how they can get your book, and if you could tell them you've created a line of skincare products that are free from toxins, and I'm sure for the ladies out there that this is very, very important. You always want to look good, and you don't want to harm yourself while you're looking good. So could you talk about the skincare product line that you've created?
Yes. I wanted to make skincare products that were all natural in terms of I made everything from scratch. I wanted to know exactly what goes in. So I did a line of soaps that I use, essential oils, herbs that I grow, in my garden. Like I just made my latest bar that I just made. I went outside, I picked up because nettle is coming up all over, and I picked my nettle. I picked comfrey that's coming up in my garden, and I used a cucumber. And I put all that in the juicer. I juice that, and I use that it colored my soap green. And not only that, all those properties of the comfrey, it's very healing. It's good for building cells, good for the skin. The nettle is the same, very good for any kind of rash or anything that's on the skin. And the cucumbers, they're all healing, very, cell regenerating. And I use that as the base along with vegetable-based oils. So my oils, coconut oil, shea butter,
mm-hmm.
and cocoa butter, and I use that as the base, and I create soaps, liquid soaps. I do body butter, lotion. And so, yes, I have a line of products that I do. And my book can be purchased on my website, which is healthiersteps.com, www.healthiersteps.com. And or on Amazon, just type in Michelle Blackwood on Amazon or Healthier Steps book. And if I may, when you talk about children, one of the best thing that I spoke with a doctor, and whenever a child has ADHD, one of the things that he highly recommend and he'll put his patients on he'll put them on a gluten-free diet, because 6 to 7 million school-age children are diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And they're on amphetamines, and these amphetamines have side effects. Think about our young, their young body, it's growing, developing. And this amphetamine, I'm sorry, it's a stimulant, and that actually alters the brain. It basically controls your impulses, it regulates behavior and attention. So with them being on amphetamines, there's so many side effects like decreased appetite, difficulty falling asleep, stomachache, headache. Even in male, they find that it elevates their blood pressure. So you're thinking of, would you rather your child be on amphetamine or would you rather just changing their diet? Can you imagine just changing? A functional medicine doctor would just change the child's diet and see great improvement in just changing diet. Instead of having these, you know, if you think about over the years, how many drugs have been recalled? Because many of the drugs that I gave 10 years ago in the hospital, they were on recall. So think about a young child being on all these mind-altering drugs, what it is doing to their young developing brain. So sometimes some parents need to really think, and I think about many of us who are African-American, that we have the highest rate of diseases in almost every aspect of disease. Heart disease, we are only 12 to 15% of the population, but yet we have the highest rate of heart disease and stroke compared to the rest of all the other population in the country. That's significant. You know, we mm-hmm. have the largest prevalence of hypertension. You know, we have the highest obesity rate, the highest in diabetes compared to the entire population. Mm-hmm. And we have even the highest rate of infant mortality. If you think about it, that's significant. There's something going on. We live in the same country. We breathe the same air. It's got to be our food. And people are not putting the correlation of our food. And you know, one of the reasons, I would say it has to be our food. It's our diet. Who eats mostly processed food? Who eats, because in our mind, we think it's cheaper to go eat a McDonald's than it is to go cook your own food. And you think about it, what are you eating? It's like empty calories. It's like you're basically putting in just, I would say, I don't even want to use that term, garbage in your system, because your body now has to detox and it's putting more work and load on the system. When you eat this food that has no nutrients, no fiber, and just for the taste, but I'm putting it out there to you that if you stop eating these foods, that you'll find that your body will heal and your body will have a desire for whole food, for wholesome mm-hmm. food.
Everybody, my special guest today has been Queen Michelle Blackwood. She's author of Healthier Steps, 125 Gluten-Free Vegan Recipes. Could you please tell everybody how they can get your book again, and if they're interested in purchasing and learning more about your skin products, and is there a telephone number where people can call? Somebody might be out there and be like, you know, listen, I heard this show. This sister was so powerful. I want her to help me. I need her assistance. I need her to help me to make this transition. I'm tired. Somebody's tired. Somebody's tired of getting the bad report. Somebody's tired of, you know, just going back and forth to the hospital. Somebody's tired of it all, and they're ready. And they're like, if you can do it, if you were laying on the operating table with your guts hanging out, okay, and you can do it, and you can show me how to do it, I need to talk to you. So can people call you if they have questions? Can they call you, or can they just reach you online?
Yes. So my book, it can be found on my website, www.healthiersteps.com, or Amazon or on any of the internet places you buy books, like Barnes & Noble, all the digital outlets. Or you can, you know, on Amazon, you just type in Michelle Blackwood or Healthier Steps book, or you can send me an email at michelle@healthiersteps.com or info@healthiersteps.com. Or you can call me. My number is 540-661-0383. 540-661-0383.
Queen Michelle, I want to thank you so much for this powerful, 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 did I say powerful? I'll say it again, powerful interview. The information that you gave was very much needed. Again, a lot of people who are vegetarian and vegan haven't really explored the gluten aspect of this whole process, and the work that you're doing is so needed, and I thank God for you and pray that God continues to open doors for you. And I just want to say again, thank you to Queen Carmen for even recommending you, referring you. You came highly recommended, and you delivered.
You.
You definitely, you delivered. And I want to say thank you so much to Queen Carmen for the referral. And speaking of Queen Carmen and Healthy 247, for those of you who are out there that are listening and you need a support group, we talked about that earlier, just having a support group of people that can help you as you're making this transition. And even if you've made the transition and you are vegan or vegetarian, you can always learn more. Healthy 247 is a group formed by Queen Carmen. And if you, you know, want to be a part of a group of people that are knowledgeable, you have people that talk about recipes, farming, I mean, growing your own food, just everything when it comes to holistic health. You hear posts about, I mean, just every aspect of it. I mean, just from your mind, your spirit, and your body. Then definitely consider sending a request to join Healthy 247. I had to give a shout out because, again, that group is powerful. And, again, I say thank you to the creator, Queen Carmen. Thank you so much, again, for the referral. Any parting words, Queen Michelle, for our listeners before we leave?
One of the biggest secret in recovering health is to stay away from processed food and to cook your own meals. I would encourage by starting to just get a cookbook, could be my book, any book, just get a cookbook and starting to learn. Whenever you see that food that has a package, I would say stay away as much as you can from packaged food, because that's where they have the hidden gluten, the hidden ingredients that you don't want to be consuming, all the additives, the preservatives. But think about it. That food is in that package because it has to have a longer shelf life. They need for it to stay on the shelves for longer. And don't let anyone use you as a guinea pig. You deserve better.
Again, that, everybody, was the voice of Queen Michelle Blackwood, author of Healthier Steps, 125 Gluten-Free Vegan Recipes. It's truly been an honor to have you as my special guest. Before we go, I want to just give a few announcements. For those of you who are regular listeners, you know that we do shows on yoga, we do shows on spirituality. Well, for those of you who are into yoga, as a matter of fact, this Thursday, day after tomorrow, my special guests are going to be the Swamis, Swami Jyotirvakyananda and Swami Abhipandananda. That's Michael Perry and Heidi Lindman. They're back, okay? So you don't want to miss Thursday's show. And for those of you who have been following the series with the 11 Laws of God, Orwahehi Meturan Comet, he comes on normally once a month. We're just waiting to for his schedule to allow for him to come back, and then we will be doing the Law of Geb. But just recently did an awesome show with Tepraim, Shechem Tepraim Sa'ah, and he was discussing a healthy and vital brain. If you want to learn about the brain, go back and listen to that show. That show was last Tuesday, I believe it was, A Healthy and Vital Brain with Shechem Tepraim Sa'ah. Also, if you're interested in the Ra and Osirian initiation, well, Hekshem Suharu Shekhamab Nater did an interview. All you have to do is just scroll down the archives and you'll see that. We've got an awesome archive system, regular guests, King Coy Dunstan, healed his mother of cancer of the colon, the liver, and the breast. Queen Ruby Lathan, Dr. Ruby Lathan, she cured herself of thyroid cancer. She's a regular guest on Jawanza for Life. All of these shows are in the archives. Again, I encourage you to check out Healthy 247. Just a special shout out to some people. Queen Patricia, I'm glad that you tuned in. Thank you so much, sister. Queen Jerry, I hope you're out there. Thank you so much, sister, for tuning in. And, of course, Queen Carmen, Queen Zelma, thank you so much for tuning in. Everybody, I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you for your support. My name is Jawanza. Her name is Queen Michelle Blackwood, author of Healthier Steps. Healthier Steps, 125 vegan recipes, 125 gluten-free vegan recipes. It has truly been an honor to speak with you today, my sister. Again, may the Creator continue to open doors for you, because, again, your testimony was powerful. Your work is very much needed. And I salute you and I bow to you. And this has been a powerful, powerful interview. And I can't wait to go back and listen to it again myself.
Oh, thank
I'm going to get the book.
Thank
too.
You. My pleasure.
I'm going to get the book.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, everybody. My name is Jawanza. Thank you so much again for tuning in. Wow. I love doing shows like this. I love powerful testimonies. I love talking to people that are changing the world, and they have a track record to prove it. And when you hear shows like this and people like this that are doing this type of work, you can't help but support them. You really can't help but support them, because look at the work they're doing. They're making this planet better. In Michelle's case, one recipe at a time. In the Swami's case, one meditation at a time. In Raul Nephi Moon's case, one book at a time. Okay? So if you like this show, if this show is impacting your life and you find it rewarding, then share it with somebody. Normally, we come on every Tuesday and Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the name of the show is Jawanza for Life. Again, I thank you. I bow to you. Peace and blessings.
when my way gets dark. I can't see the forest for the trees. I raise my head to the moon.